This podcast is made possible by thousands of dedicated listeners just like you. Be a part of this powerful three-decade legacy of evangelization by visiting materdeiradio.com or downloading the Hail Mary media app. And thank you for joining us on the bridge between your faith and everyday life.
The Holy Spirit continues to set hearts on fire with the love of Christ and inspire people to bring the good news to a world that is aching to hear it. Welcome to Blazing the Trail, a weekly show dedicated to the church's mission of evangelization. Now, here's your guide on this grand adventure, Catholic singer, songwriter, author, and speaker, Miriam Marston.
And welcome back to Blazing the Trail here on Mater Dei Radio. My name is Miriam Marston, and it's a joy to be with you each week as we reflect together on the church's mission of sharing the good news of the truth and love of Jesus Christ. As I record this, we're a couple of weeks into ordinary time, and it's the beginning of summer. And as some of the pace at work has settled down, and this is more of a season of rest and planning and re-energizing, I find it's one of those times of year where I take stock of how things have been going these last months. But it's also a good time to look back with gratitude on not just a few months, but also all these years of walking with the Lord. And while it's of course a great joy and a source of inspiration to hear from my guest about how they themselves have been evangelized and brought to their respective ministries and apostolates, I thought I would take time in this episode to share a bit of how I've been evangelized and some of those turning points in the life of faith. And here we are 4 years into this show, and the reason I love hosting the show is because I too have experienced that great blessing of encountering Christ and striving to follow where He leads me, and I just never tire of hearing other stories of grace and mercy at work in our world today. Because each of those stories is an opportunity to be reminded of how God has worked in my own life, and I should never take that for granted. So to get started, I thought I would share a simple song that I wrote years ago in an attempt to kind of capture some of those earliest movements of God in my life. I know I am one of countless people who have been evangelized by way of beauty and the wonder of creation, and there's real power in those memories. You know, in one version of the ancient myth, the Athenian named Ariadne gave a ball of thread to Theseus, the man she loved, who was trapped in a labyrinth, and the thread helped him find his way out, and they were able to be together, at least for a little while, since most Greek myths don't end very happily, but the imagery of Ariadne's thread is a useful one for this meditation, since again, I composed this song in an attempt to retrace my steps back to my earliest impressions of God. And I remember sitting at the piano with my eyes closed, and I contemplated that divine thread running through various events and encounters, pulling me in closer through the gateway towards truth and life. And as I look back, I observe that it was kind of slow and arduous work. But in the song, I call God a patient lover, and for good reason. And He was there chasing me through my childhood, like two friends playing a game of tag in a schoolyard. He tenderly pursued me during those lessons when I learned left from right and right from wrong. He was the presence in the empty wicker chair when I played tea time with dolls. And when I explored the neighborhood with friends and siblings, He heard my little heart beat as we encountered so many innocent dangers and thrills. This is not just nostalgia or the kind of recollection that brings you back for the sake of keeping you there. But rather, sometimes a thoughtful walk down memory lane is enough to give a pulse to a weakening faith or to irrigate the dry soil of the soul. I often like to speak of the memory of good, and here I'm not just speaking of a general goodness that exists as the backdrop of the whole history of creation, but also those very personal and immediate goods which have blossomed in our own lives. Each of us can tell stories of our own unique immersions into this ocean of abundant goodness. In my case, the first introduction to this sea of goodness was, in fact, quite close to the sea. I was about 12 years old and on a family trip to the Breton region of France, where my mother is from. And one evening, we stopped the car at a place called Le Gouffre so that we could get a better view of the sunset on the coast. Now, I could not have quite articulated it at the time, but that sunset gave me my first real experience of beauty. The kind of beauty that possesses a meaning and points to something beyond itself. It was the first time I had an inkling that there might be an author behind the whole design of the universe. Of course, the universe was still quite small at that point, at least in my 12-year-old perception of things. And did I suddenly feel compelled to change the way I lived? And was my destiny opened up before me like a clear and well-written map? No, not really. But my young heart was stirred that day and a seed was planted. And years later, when I reached a moment of crisis in my faith and the world seemed unfriendly and ugly, I remembered the beauty of that sunset and hope was kindled once again. So here is that song entitled To Whimsy and Stone, where I speak of encounters with God in the storm, in the sunset, and in the silence. And I'll be back with more reflections on the other side of the song.
And I started out with left and right, small wicker chairs and early nights. Tying a shoe was no small thing. Lofty the joy their ways will bring. I took an afternoon to wonder why all the noise and all the thunder roll that storm. Oh, oh, you wore it so well. I never could outrun your reach. Started out with right and wrong, wars and alliances belonged only in realms within a yard, leaving us glad with tiny scars. I took an evening to discover signs of a god of patient love.
So I can say with confidence that this encounter with beauty and creation was an early spiritual experience. But I can say with equal confidence that I am grateful that the story did not end there. Yes, I am thankful for the sunset, but I am more thankful for the God who created it. Because truth be told, I could never have had a relationship with that evening sun. The clouds, as pretty as they were, would not have been able to answer questions or listen to my prayers. The colors were lively, but they were not truly alive. This makes me think of that notion that one doesn't need organized religion or an institution in order to find God, that it is sufficient to experience Him in creation and leave it at that. Now, on a certain level, I agree that God is everywhere. He can wrap Himself in the mantle of the simple majesty of a summer storm or a magnificent sunset or in the silence of the highest mountain peaks. But why settle for a God in disguise when we can have a relationship with a God who has revealed Himself in the form of a man? I think the easy answer, and one that I'm guilty of having used, is that a disguised God, a hidden God who has this ambiguous presence everywhere, well, He doesn't ask much of us. Whereas the more we know about Him and what He has to say, the more we might have to amend our lives. I include a line in the song, "Tell me the way that this all ends. Tell me so I can start again. What of the road that bends away from all this darling disarray?" Now, one meaning of conversion is to turn. And it's not always easy to turn, especially when our feet have been so firmly planted and facing one direction for a very long time. We become accustomed to the scenery and we'd rather not tamper with it. We become strangely attached even to the chaos in our lives, that darling disarray. These lyrics were inspired by a character in Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings. Gollum is a sad creature whose existence has increasingly revolved around the possession of a certain ring. But the ring is evil, and it is destroying him slowly, making him less and less himself. But he still, even after all that, calls it his precious. We wonder how such a wretched thing could be so precious. It seems clear to us that the whole time he thought he was in possession of the ring, it was really the ring that was in possession of him. But is it such a remote possibility? Are we so removed from Gollum's drama? How often have we become ensnared in vice and bad habits, unable to recognize the traps we've set for ourselves and actually mistaking the corrupt for the good? I would guess that we all have a few rings of power in our lives, and they are not so easy to throw away. But throw them away we must if we want to turn away from sin and be converted to Christ. Now, part of the beauty of that Breton sunset was how it surprised me. And I don't mean that I was surprised to see the sun go down. I mean, I had enough basic science to understand the mechanics of how the earth revolved around the sun, but I was surprised that it felt so much like a gift. I don't remember having done any good deeds worthy of a reward. If anything, I had most certainly argued with someone in my family that very day. But there I was, the recipient of an unexpected present, wrapped up in the dazzling colors of fire and water. And what does one do with such a splendid and generous surprise? Well, as I mentioned before, I didn't do much at first. Again, it is a great thing that our Lord is so patient. But I did begin to wonder, as the years went by, why it felt as though someone was attending to me, as though my existence really mattered in this enormous and untidy world. It's like in the psalm, "What is man that you are mindful of him, the son of man that you care for him?" Now, on more than one occasion, my personality has been described as whimsical. And it sounds fun and quaint at first, but I'm not certain it's always a compliment. I mean, who wants to be the flighty one or the one caught up in a daydream after all? So I've had to learn how to infuse this character trait with a sense of realism. And perhaps this is why the whimsical types need, more than others, a sturdy place to land. And that realization is the reason behind the title To Whimsy and Stone. The stone represents the steadiness and the sturdiness of the church, which was built on rock and which has endured and will continue to endure the crashing of countless waves upon her walls. I'm so grateful for the gift of that sunset on the ocean and the gift of a childlike faith that so easily experiences wonder. And here I am reminded of some words by G.K. Chesterton from his book Orthodoxy, where he writes, "Because children have abounding vitality, because they are in spirit fierce and free, therefore they want things repeated and unchanged. They always say, 'Do it again,' and the grown-up person does it again until he is nearly dead. For grown-up people are not strong enough to exult in monotony. But perhaps God is strong enough to exult in monotony. It is possible that God says every morning, 'Do it again,' to the sun, and every evening, 'Do it again,' to the moon. It may not be automatic necessity that makes all daisies alike. It may be that God makes every daisy separately, but has never got tired of making them. It may be that he has the eternal appetite of infancy, for we have sinned and grown old, and our Father is younger than we." And I can't forget that having received all this from the Father, I now have a duty to share that wonder with others and point others to the beauty of God. As the author George MacDonald wrote, "If I can put one touch of rosy sunset into the life of any man or woman, I shall feel that I have worked with God." So moving from sunsets to sunrises, I'm going to share another song with you by the group The Grey Havens, entitled The Shadows of the Dawn. And again, just take this time to identify any of the divine threads in your own life when you felt that God was pursuing you or when you were chasing after Him. And I'll be back with a final reflection after the song.
Away and still not far, like fabric woven into ours. The dawn has shot out through the night, and day is coming soon. The kingdom of the morning star can pierce a cold and stony heart. Its grace went through me like a sword and came out like a song. Now I'm just waiting for the day in the shadows of the dawn. But I won't wait, rest in my bones. I'll take these foolishness roads of grace and run toward the dawn. And when I rise, dawn turns to day. I'll shine as bright as the sun, and these roads that I've run will be wise. It's veiled and stands behind the shroud. The final day when trumpets sound. Sometimes I glimpse into the fog and listen for the song. Till then, I'm waiting for the day in the shadows of the dawn. But I won't wait, rest in my bones. I'll take these foolishness roads of grace and run toward the dawn. Waiting for the day in the shadows of the dawn.
In the first part of the episode, I shared how God introduced himself to me in my early years, but he really made his entrance in my young adult years and upended everything I thought I knew about the world. So here, I'm going to share with you a reflection that I first drafted back in 2005 as I was trying to describe an experience of God that I actually had in 2002. and it begins like this. I didn't always have a second birthday. For the first 20 years of my life, I celebrated one birthday a year, which is, after all, a perfectly reasonable standard to follow. And each year, I would blow the candles out and then tackle the gifts. But then came my other birthday, and I have not been able to blow those candles out, even after all this time, because those flames are made of something that could withstand even hurricane-force winds. It was my junior year of college, and I was alone in my dorm room at the start of that first, second birthday. Well, that's not exactly true. In fact, I was very much not alone. I don't think I have ever been so not alone in my whole life. There was a very important guest at my birthday, and he was to change everything. Or perhaps I should say that I was the guest at my very own party, because I didn't know what to expect. In fact, I didn't even know it would be my birthday. It was mid-January, and you're familiar with that season, I'm sure, when the Christmas lights have dimmed and the resolutions of the new year begin to falter slightly as they face the prospect of a long winter. Like so many others that year, I was very tired. But on this day, the restless exhaustion was kept at bay, and my mind was granted a quiet moment. And in that moment, I opened a door, an act I have come to understand as an instance of grace-filled curiosity. To my unexpected delight, I stumbled upon a roaring fire, most graciously prepared by the host, who was remarkably kind, especially given that he had been waiting for me for quite some time. Now, as I still did not know it was going to be my birthday, I cautiously approached this intriguing yet inviting fire, and found it was much warmer and brighter than anything I had ever encountered. A tender and generous spirit sent an inexhaustible heat to the very tips of my fingers and toes. It started in my heart, but soon began flowing through my veins, as though the sensation was racing to find enough room to accommodate it. I was living something unfamiliar, but there was also something strangely familiar that told me I need not be afraid, as though I was in the safe company of a very close old friend with whom I had not corresponded in a very long time. I knew it would be foolish to turn away, although I was perfectly free to do so. And so I beheld the fire a bit longer. Before I knew it, my eyes had turned to waterfalls, tears of an innocent and ancient joy that I had buried beneath myself. I was dancing through my childhood again, those times that were undisturbed by the breaking of the world around it. My heart very nearly burst with the explosion of life and laughter, and it was something greater than me that kept this still unnamed and untamed fervor from causing me to shout out my absurd and ecstatic contentment and peace. All my worries and doubts positively melted under the heat of this fire. I laughed yet again, this time at my own foolishness for having clung so long to what the world had been desperately trying to offer me. At this point, my most gracious host introduced himself, and not only did he introduce himself, but he even went so far as to ask me if he could make a dwelling place within me. But I hesitated. Why ever would the creator of such a fire want to live inside me? But he would hear nothing of my objections. What's more, he said in his most gentle, healing whisper, "You are my daughter, whom I love." What a day! Not only do I get a second birthday, but I'm also introduced to a spiritual inheritance of which I knew nothing before. I became aware of an impressively long line of previously undiscovered ancestors, all of whom I've since learned were trying to tell me about this promise all along. And so it was time to leave my room and take the party outside. I murmured a few hellos on my way to the door, anxious to see how this new and still slightly odd birthday gift would fare in the world out there. Down and down the steps, and there was still a part of me that hesitated and wanted to retreat back to my little room, where I could carry on gazing wistfully at the fire. But the path ahead called my name, and so I stepped out into the sunlight. Actually, I don't remember if it was a sunny day. It could have been the rainiest day on record. But as I felt that all the power of the sun was shining inside me, I would not have noticed nor cared. As far as I was concerned, the sun would never set again. So I walked down paths that should have felt familiar and saw places and faces that should have been carved in my memory, and yet somehow it all looked new. I felt as though I could reach out and touch even the air itself, invisible as it was, but it was suddenly pulsating with an essence and energy. The colors around me blossomed into life, and even the unexciting biology department building looked like a place I wanted to wander into, as though I might discover dragons or treasure there. Instead of swimming through a messy collage of vague textures and sounds, I was starting to notice how the world around me, including the mundane parts, had definition and character. Each person, each smile, each frown, I was overwhelmed by the sensation that they were all part of a majestic and glorious plan that was unfolding, even in that very moment. But come to think of it, it didn't even feel as though time was functioning in moments anymore, locked away in tidy minutes and hours and days. Time had burst from its prison, and I was suspended there somewhere between this life and the next, this world and the world to come. At every turn, this new view was spectacular, though I am sorry to report that words can provide only a very inadequate description. And just as my sense of time had been altered, so was my perception of others. I was no longer walking past strangers. I believe my wonderful host loved them as sons and daughters as well. His mercy had made friends of us all. And there we have it, a most unusual turn of events. I wasn't even looking for a second birthday, but it certainly was looking for me. I began to believe in a new way, in those good things that we imagine and hear about, even if it's only in soft-spoken rumors or whispers in a crowd. Nothing about that day was thunderous. I don't recall hearing any trumpets. If anything, it was as though God had invited me over for tea, and we conversed in front of a blazing fireplace. And as I was being happily overwhelmed, that strong and pure fire gracefully seized the opportunity to break into my stubborn heart in order to reveal to me the true center of the universe. And I, thank goodness, was not the center. If, as I sometimes deceive myself into believing, if I had been that all-knowing center, nothing about that exquisite January day would have been able to surprise me at all. And the surprise was one of the best parts. And I do wish there were more second birthdays to celebrate. That's an awful lot more cake to share. So in this ordinary time, let's give thanks to the God who, in his great love, never stops reaching out and never stops running after us. Maybe this week is a good moment to slow down, pause, and look around, and let ourselves be caught by Christ and swept up into the mystery of his divine love. Thank you so much for tuning in. Again, my name is Miriam Marston, and I hope you'll join me next time for more stories on what God is doing through his people today. Until then, stay well and stay close to Christ. God bless you all.
You've been listening to Blazing the Trail, a weekly show dedicated to the church's mission of evangelization. For more information on Miriam Marston and her work, plus an archive of our past shows, visit us online at MatreDayRadio.com or download the Hail Mary Media app. Blazing the Trail is produced at the studios of Mater Day Radio in Portland, Oregon.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider sharing it with a friend. You can support this vital mission of evangelization through MatreDayRadio.com or the Hail Mary Media app. And thank you for helping us lead souls to Jesus through the Blessed Virgin Mary.